5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott, from my little house this week. And also with me from his little house. Or is it a massive castle? I can never tell.
No, just moderate.
Because he doesn't let me in. Robin Christopherson's here. Hello.
Absolutely. Personal space, isolation, separation from Stephen is the order of the next 6 months, I think.
Oh, do you know, if I had a heart, that would hurt. Andy's also here. Hi, Andy.
Hello. Yes, I'm here from my castle in the sky.
Oh, you are in the sky, yeah, because you're like, what, 15,000 floors up or something. It's ridiculous.
Or just four, yeah.
That's a lot.
That's still a penthouse, I think.
Probably higher than the pair of you, I think. But
yep. Oh, well, you think that, yeah. He's got an altitude problem, Robin. Thinks he's higher up than everyone else. Oh, dear. Hey, listen, we're not going to even get into jokes because before we started this, we were talking about cheese jokes.
Mm-hmm. And they were.
I have to be honest. I think that there has to be a certain level of understanding of cheese to get into cheese jokes. Because I can only think of cheddar, and I can think of
Gorgonzola.
Gordon, well, I don't know who he is, but I know Brie. I've heard of that. That's about it. So I can't go much further than that.
Our favourite one is Black Bomber. It comes with black, evil-looking black wax around the side. It's like the evil twin of Edam.
Right, okay. You're clearly posh, right? I have no idea what you're talking about. Right, okay. Well, look, before we start getting into how posh is Robin Christopherson, which clearly is a feature we must do. I think we do it every week, actually. We just ask you about various things. Can I just quickly say that? I've got to say this. I always remember having a chat with Robin on the phone one day, Andrew, and he said, Andrew?
Andrew?
You know, posh
dear,
here. It's because I'm in the presence
that's
of royalty.
Raise the tone, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy, I was telling Robin about something we were going to have for dinner, and I said, I do love a bit of cheesy pasta. And he's like, what's that? I said, oh, it's like cheesy pasta. You get it in a box. And he's like, what, cheesy pasta in a box? You were horrified, weren't you? You just had no idea what I was talking
about. You're obviously just more advanced than we are, because macaroni cheese comes in a box in America, and they're obviously ahead of us. So, I didn't know it came in a box.
I don't think they're ahead of us. Anyway, right, moving on. Before we start upsetting people, especially around cheese and America, basically become an international incident on this programme, we are going to try and keep the tone up because, of course, everybody's just really worried and nervous about what's going on in the world just now. So we're going to try and take you away from that for an hour. But we are going to do that by showing you lots of interesting things. Like, for example, we're going to talk in a minute about the Amazon Echo, which we've talked about before, but we're going to get into some really specific things that it can do, Robin. I'm looking forward to that conversation, and you're going to be leading on that for us this week. You're going to do some work for a change. Also, Andy's got the emails.
Oh, plenty. Yeah, all of the ones that have been building up in our inbox.
There's a lot in there, and there's a lot still to come. So, yeah, please keep them coming in. We will get to them. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We've got so much more time now. We can sit and read all your emails. We should get another hour on air. They should just give us another hour.
Just give a whole day.
Yeah, it could just be on every day. Actually, do you know what? Let's not suggest that in case that happens. Now, we are also going to talk about an organisation called Vital Tech. They offer support to blind and partially sighted people in the realms of accessible tech. We'll talk about them. Roland Myers is here with a report on that. And Robin, I know you got this interview in from David Woodbridge, and we thought we'd share it here on Tech Talk, and that is about the Bristol Braille Commute.
Yeah, I'm sure people are aware of its existence, but a little bit more information and a hands-on demo of how it works and, you know, a user experience in practice of reading books on there, how the kind of menus work and the different buttons and that sort of thing.
And if you don't know what it is, it's essentially, I call it a Kindle for Braille, because that's really what it is. What's that, 9-line display? You've got, you know, full, I guess 40 cells as well. So you've got 40 cells on a line, you've got 9 lines, so you can read a full book or a full page of a book.
It's like a Kindle for bodybuilders.
Yes, it is heavy. That is true. It is heavy. So I wouldn't suggest this is something for your lap, which is a shame because it'd be really nice to get to a point where that will, and I'm sure it will come at some point. That would be really good. Because, I mean, the size of these Braille displays are getting smaller and smaller. The weight is decreasing all the time. So, yeah, maybe one day. But, yeah, we'll talk about that later with David. Let's get into the Echo, though, because I do love my Amazon Echo. And interestingly, in my little house here, I've actually got on the wall an Echo Dot and a Google Home. And I could so easily play the game of which one do I use most, because the Google Home isn't even plugged in. I just don't use it. Well, that's another reason, because it isn't plugged in, obviously. But at the same time, I just don't have a reason to ask it anything. I always use Lady A. Can't say her name because she'll hear me. But anyway, I love it. And there are so many things you can do with it. But you're going to explain first, Robin, how you can use your Echo for communication. And I think a lot of people out there may not realize that you can do a lot of communication with your device, not just drop in. Although that is one, which is a great way to connect with family. You can also use your Echo as an intercom at home, but you can do more with it, can't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe we'll cover those in a little bit more detail in future episodes. We're certainly thinking about featuring what you can do with your Echo that would be relevant or useful in this, you know, this time that we're in at the moment where you're at home. Maybe you want to communicate with people. Maybe you're working from home and you want to stay organized. Maybe you're feeling a bit stressed and anxious, and what can you use the Echo for to help with that, etc., etc. There are so many applications that the A-Lady can be put to kind of help with the what we're all going through over the coming weeks and potentially months as well. But we thought we'd start off here with a really practical one, which is being able to stay in touch with people. And you've mentioned drop in. That is so brilliant. That's something you have to opt into. And then you can just, you know, contact another Echo and instantly be having a chat with that person. What we're going to look at here. Now, this is a demo that Randy Rusnak, the big R on Twitter, over in the States, kindly did with me. So this is from the Dot to Dot podcast. People may have heard of the daily Echo skill demo show that we do. And this is one of the earlier episodes because I covered this, you know, quite soon after setting up the podcast because it is so useful. But the audio quality, well, people that are listening to the show more recently, this will sound a little bit different. But this is myself and Randy Rusnak demonstrating the what was then new Skype feature. And it will start with Randy having about to set up a call with me. And this is after we had connected to each other via the, if you go into settings, then under settings, you've got communication and then you've got Skype. And in there, you just have to put in your details about your Skype account. So once you're connected, everybody else in your contacts on your phone that has done the same is then going to be available for what Randy is about to do now.
Skype, Robin Christofferson.
Did you mean Robin Christofferson?
Yes.
Calling Robin Christofferson on Skype.
Hey, dude. Big good old Skype ringtone.
Yeah, it's all really cool stuff. Robin and I started talking about this, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, and we got it all working and set up, and I must say this is really cool stuff. What do you think?
I think it's absolutely brilliant. So now you can Skype anyone just, you know, by talking to the air. Obviously, they need to be in your Skype contacts, and it's really clear, and I think the whole kind of full duplex thing is working.
Oh, yeah.
We should probably try and talk over each other.
Okay, I'm going to talk over you. Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah, it's clear. It's not cutting out or anything. So, yeah. I wanted to remind people about the other ways that you can communicate from your Echo. And it's actually a little bit more complicated now. So if you guys have jumped onto, you know, setting up Skype, connecting to your A-Lady account, via the app, for example, then you're actually going to find it slightly more complicated to call people the old-fashioned way, which is echo-to-echo without Skype being involved. And that's still a really, really useful way to do that. So if we hang up now, I'm going to demo how to do that. Is that okay?
That's really great.
Is So I'm going to kick you off then. Talk in a second.
Well, why should you be different than anybody else? Try to kick me off. All right. Now we're waiting for Robin to actually call me from his Echo to my Echo device.
That was really rude. I just cut him off in his prime. Okay. So if you say call such and such and they're in your Skype contacts, then they're going to, I think it's going to automatically use Skype. So you have to be careful now, guys. You have to say call so-and-so on their Echo or call so-and-so's Echo. You'll see, I'll say call Randy Rusnak's Echo and she'll say, do you mean call Randy Rusnak's Alexa? We'll see. Alexa, call Randy Rusnak's Echo.
Did you mean Randy Rusnak's Alexa?
Yes.
Calling.
Hey, dude.
Hello.
So, apologies that it took me a while to call you back there, but I was waffling. I was waffling on to the listeners about how you need to be careful of what you say once you've set up the Skype calling as well. So, the last thing we should talk about is sending a message, because you can't do that via Skype. You can't IM someone to their Skype account using the A-Lady. So we'll finish off just by, do you want to send me a message or should I send you one?
So I'll send you one.
Okay then. So I hung up on you last time very rudely, so you can hang out this time.
I think I hear Faith in the background. Is that her in the background?
It was Faith. So actually Faith can hang up. Say,
go for it, Faith. Alexa, hang up.
Thank you, Faye.
Bye. I've never been hung up by a nicer person. All right. So I'm going to send Robin a message through the Echo device. And I'm going to hit the action button so we don't set up all of your devices and he can be recording a little easier, not have to edit anything. Send a message to Robin Christofferson.
Did you mean Robin Christofferson?
Yes.
What's the message?
I must say I've never been hung up on by a nicer person.
Got it. Should I send it? Sending from Randy.
All right, now we'll wait to hear.
Okay, that told me I've got a message. Now, if I'm not in the house to hear that sound, then it will also come up in your notification center on your phone saying that you've had an A-Lady notification or message from someone, in this case, Randy. Alexa, what are my messages?
Two for Robin Christofferson, two from Randy Rusnak.
This is pretty cool, though.
Received about 20 minutes ago.
I must say I have never been hung up on by a nicer person.
Received just now.
How cool is that? He sent me a sneaky one earlier as well.
What a great thing this is. Once everybody gets all linked together, it just makes things, the whole world is a little smaller, isn't it?
There you go.
Well, that is impressive stuff, isn't it? I mean, the way you can just connect that way, and, you know, Randy's in the States and you're in the UK, you're able just to talk back and forward pretty much instantly.
Yeah, so just to recap what we covered there, without doing anything, when you set up an Echo, it will ask you if you want to share your phone's communication contacts with the A-Lady app on your phone. And, you know, you definitely want to do that. And then when you do that, you can send a message to someone by saying send a message to, and then the name of the person, and they'll always confirm that they understood that name, that person's name, right, by telling it back to you. And then you can send them a voice message like that. If you say call a person, then it should default to sending it Echo to Echo, setting up a call Echo to Echo. If, however, you have connected Skype up in under the settings, put in your Skype details, then in my experience, it often Skypes that person, when you just say call Randy, for example. So when that's the case, you might want to say call Randy's Echo, and then you'll be sure to do Echo to Echo, or if you want to Skype them, call so-and-so's Skype. Now, what's the benefit of Skyping over Echo to Echo calling? Well, if the person hasn't got an Echo, for example, loads of people have got Skype accounts and it will just ring their computer or their phone via Skype, etc. So it's just much more flexible. It broadens out the people that you can stay in touch with. And, you know, in these coming weeks, etc., having options in that regard is obviously really, really beneficial.
Yeah, and you can do similar, Andy. You know, you've got the Google Home there, and as do I. And yeah. I haven't tested this, but you can do similar on that, can't you?
It is, yeah, but I, like you, I send to preferred Lady A. I know that Google does a very similar thing, and we've been trying out very different Google bits of software as well for video chats. So, yeah, it's definitely something I'm going to have to keep an eye on and keep trying in the future, because, like you, I do tend to favour the Amazon model over the Google model. But at least mine's plugged in.
Yeah, mine's isn't at all. I really should do that. Okay, so that's useful, and I'm glad you clarified that about Skype versus the Echo, because some people may say, oh, do I need another account? Do I need to have this? You don't actually, do you? I mean, if you've got an Echo, your friend's got an Echo, or your family member has an Echo, as long as you both have Echoes, really, you know, you can communicate with each other. Yeah. It's as simple as that, really.
And I should probably, the final bit of info then, is if somebody Skypes your Skype account, so if someone Skypes you, then unless you tell it not to, your echoes around the house will ring with that Skype do-do-do thing as well, phone and your computer and wherever you're logged in on Skype as well. So, yeah, just be aware that you'll have the option of picking up.
That's why I stopped using it.
Well, absolutely.
I stopped it for that reason, because everything in my house, I've got about 17 devices, went off every time I got a Skype call. It was, and you know, sometimes you'd maybe be in bed at night and someone would accidentally call you on Skype at 11 o'clock at night, and the whole house is ringing.
Yeah.
It is not the best.
We should talk about do not disturb as well, because you can set that per device or by certain hours, and certainly the one in the office here is on do not disturb during working hours.
Yeah, mine should be, but it's not actually at the moment. Anyway, I'll just not say her name. Simple as that. Okay, so that's fine if you want to communicate, and I think that's a really useful tool. What about the sort of business end of things? I'm always intrigued by how you use yours to access your calendar.
Yes, so my preference, the order of preference of looking things up in my busy week schedule, or if you've just got a doctor or dentist appointment, is the least one I like is Outlook on the computer, because, you know, it's a faff and you have to kind of work your way around things with keystrokes. The next one that I like doing better is on the phone, because the calendar app in List View, guys, is really simple. You can just swipe down or use a three-finger swipe up to, you know, move by several days at a time. But my favourite one by a long way is the Echo. And just to ask her quickly what's coming up for the rest of the day, what are my appointments this afternoon, what are my appointments next Thursday, are really, really easy. And that's what we're going to hear now. Alexa, what am I doing on Saturday?
There are no events scheduled on Saturday, the 18th of February.
So let's create one. Alexa, add an appointment called Go Shopping for 10 a.m. on Saturday morning.
That's Go Shopping on Saturday, the 18th of February at 10 a.m, right?
Yes.
Okay, I've added that.
So that's created an appointment for Saturday morning. So now if I ask, Alexa, what am I doing on Saturday?
On Saturday, the 18th of February, there is one event. At 10 a.m, there's Go Shopping.
Now, you can't delete that event, but you can access your calendar on your smartphone. For example, under the calendar app, I can see those appointments popping in there, and so I can delete them from there. It's still very useful for being able to query what's coming up. So what am I doing next Thursday afternoon?
On Thursday, the 23rd of February, there is one event in the afternoon. At 4 p.m. there's dentist.
But I can't actually ask the A-lady to search for that event. So there you go. There is this, a couple of restrictions still today. That was many months ago I did that demo, but nothing's really changed there. You can't ask when your next dentist appointment is, for example, which would be super useful. And you can't ask her to delete an appointment, you have to do that via the app. Now, the calendars that are supported under settings in your A-Lady app are Google, Microsoft, i.e., you know, Exchange and Office 365, etc., and Apple, which is iCloud. Now, it's funny because in the app itself, it says instead of those three, Google, Microsoft, and Apple, you'll see three things which say, add accessibility logic here. Each three of those three things say, add accessibility logic here. So you've basically got three unlabeled calendars, but tapping through will tell you that they're Google, Microsoft, and Apple in that order. But yeah, I thought that was quite funny. So that's a bug at the moment.
Hmm. Yeah, that's been in fact, it used to just say calendar, didn't it?
Yeah.
So it's been upgraded to say something else. Yeah. Insert thing here. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Well, yeah.
I'd like to ask about privacy. Now, if somebody else accesses your calendar, are they reading out the same thing or?
So that's really interesting. With the Echo, I'm not sure about Google Home. Recently, they have added in what's called voice print capability, which is if you say, "Hey, lady, learn my voice," then she will ask you to say a couple of things and ask you your name, and then she'll know that you are Andy from now on. And certain things are tied to that, including what appointments she reads out from your calendar.
Right,
how secure that is, other people trying to sound like you, I don't know.
They haven't quite got the voice print thing perfect yet, have they? I know it is something that is available and it should recognise you by voice, but
in our family, it always gets it right, but maybe we just don't sound like each other very much.
You sound nothing like anybody, Robin. You're a one to yourself.
I'm very aware of that.
Right, let's get into the emails then. We're going to talk more. And I've actually, just before we do that, just to mention the Dot to Dot podcast, which is an absolute mine of information. Brilliant podcast. How many episodes have you done to date?
I think we're up to something like 1,158 or something.
Pathetic, it really is. You should have done more by now. Right, okay, moving on to emails. And we're getting so many of your emails through, we just can't cram them all into one show, but we're going to try. And we're going to kick off with more on the reading services, Andy. Everyone's still talking about that.
Yes, we'll start off with an email from Sally. She says, "Hello there. If it's not too late, I'd like to give you my thoughts as an iPad voiceover user on RNIB reading services. I first heard about the new service when it was mentioned in passing by RNIB on InTouch in September 2018, and I've mainly patiently been looking forward to it since then. Since listening to Robin's demo on Tech Talk back in February, I began the sign-up process. Here's what I tweeted later that day. At RNIB Library. Hello. I've registered with RNIB Reading Services, logged on, searched, downloaded two books, and moved them to my Easy Reader app using VoiceOver on my iPad. All without sighted help. Some luck, some judgment, and a bit of frustration, but I'm there. It's looking good. A few more visits to the website over the next couple of days was enough to make me conversant with it. I'd say that I'm averagely competent with tech, and back in February, an update to the Easy Reader app enabled downloading through the app, direct to the app, no more double downloading. What I've particularly been waiting for is download access to the whole catalogue. Not quite there yet, as I understand, but it's certainly a lot better than the Overdrive catalogue. After a number of blank years, I got back into reading again in the mid-1990s through RNIB Library, and I will always be grateful. If Overdrive was a mistake, it's now history, and I think RNIB should be commended for the new service and all the work and persuasion required to bring the publishers on board. RNIB Reading Services on Echo, I'm looking forward to it. P.S. Please tell Karina that when you search for books on the website, there is a drop-down menu for the selection of required format." That is an email from Sally.
Yeah, thank you, Sally. I can't wait for it to be on the Echo either. And the Humanware Victor Reader Stream. I've had a chance to try out what it's like in the States when you use the NLB, the National Library, NLS, I should say, a National Library Service there. And it is brilliant because it's so easy to access and find the books you want, and that's coming. And like you say, we've got the Echo feature coming soon as well, Sally. Yeah, really looking forward to it. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And yeah, it should be a big upgrade from Overdrive. I don't know if I'd go so far to say Overdrive was a mistake. I don't think anybody would ever say that. Well, I wouldn't say it was a mistake. I think it was an option at the time that was obviously taken, and you know, they thought it was the right move at the time.
Certainly not a mistake, in as much as, apart from having to do what they've done now, which they, for whatever reason, felt they weren't able to do then, which was invest hugely in doing it, yeah. You know, rolling their own. It was the only one out there, and it was the go-to one for online library services all around the world. It just happened to be a dog from an accessibility point of view, and exactly. I really didn't like the Overdrive app. I struggled with it. So, yeah, that's why.
I tried it, and then I went straight out and got an Audible account.
Exactly.
That's how much I
exactly.
liked it.
So, yeah, you probably haven't got the same depth of feeling about it as people that tried to stick with it anyway. So, yeah.
Well, exactly, and I think that's the point. I mean, you know, I cancelled my Audible description Audible subscription is what I'm trying to say. And I cancelled it as soon as I tried out the new reading services website. I was so impressed by it. Now, I know everybody has a different view on that, and that's fine. But I actually think they've done a great job with this. And we've called it version one. Some say that's unfair. I think it is version one. I think everybody would agree that. It's early days. But the point is that the more we feedback, you know, the better it will become. We've got to feedback. We can't moan about it in our own quarters. We've got to get the word out, and that's why all the feedback that comes to us we give to the RNIB reading services team in the library. And I've got to say, they are so pleased to get this response. Some people I know have been concerned that, you know, maybe the staff would be unhappy about this, you know, all the work they've put in, and you know that it's not going to be appreciated, all this criticism. Well, you know, any constructive criticism that is leveled at it, you know, is welcome, because that's what they've told me. So it's a good thing. Yep. It's a really good thing. There have been a couple of other emails on this, Andy.
So this next one is from Gordon. It starts, "Dear Stephen, Robin and Andy, I've just listened to the latest podcast and enjoyed it as always. I thought I'd give you some feedback on a couple of the items you discussed. I am a big fan of the Dolphin Easy Reader for reading talking books, so it was great when the new reading services library at last came through that app. And once I got set up, I found it very similar to the old Overdrive library, but with additional navigation features and much more informative search results. I'm really enjoying listening to my books via the new service, with my only very slight grumble being that the books do seem to take a little bit longer to download. First world problems. Seriously, I do like the new service via Easy Reader, and I would recommend it to anyone. Now, on the topic of Spotify, I use this via my iPhone with VoiceOver, but I've never liked it. Spotify constantly alters the way that the app responds, and I have constant battles with it. I recently saw someone posting on Facebook that Spotify intend to update the app to show only images rather than buttons, and that it is not intended to be accessible. Now, this may be a rumour, but it prompted me to find an alternative way of listening to music, because I was already fed up with Spotify. I realised that I am paying for Amazon Music to get songs from Lady A, so I downloaded the Amazon Music app, and I discovered that it is mostly accessible and much more usable with VoiceOver than Spotify is. The only field which doesn't seem to be properly labelled is the search box, but once you know where it is, it's easy enough to use. It's well worth checking out, especially if you're fed up with Spotify. All the best. That's from Gordon.
Yeah, I find it difficult with these. I used to love spending a lot of time creating playlists with music and stuff. I don't really get much enjoyment out of it with these apps, if I'm honest. I know that the phone apps are probably the better option than the web versions, for sure. But I don't know, I just don't get the enjoyment out of it, Robin. Do you ever bother with these?
We're a Spotify family, in as much as the kids insist on it, because I don't know, for whatever reason, they think it's worth paying the money. But yeah, we're a Prime member as well. And I find that the playlists, because I don't really choose my own music. I would just say, play me such and such music, relaxing music, you know, jazz, lounge music or something. Just make up a phrase of something that you kind of fancy at that time. And I found those really good. And
do you wear a smoking jacket as well?
Yeah, and a little something in your hand. I think that For me, that would be Tango or something. But or is that still around? Anyway, the
oh, you ask your butler.
Yeah, bring me. So I think that the playlists that they use there, and certainly Echoes, for example, default to Amazon Music still, are fine. And I don't see the point of spending more money. I know that Spotify have many podcasts that are unique to them now. So if you want those, then that might be a reason to go for Spotify. Or, and there's no doubt it's got a bigger music library. But yeah, depends what you want out of it and whether the kind of basic offering would tick your boxes.
I'm still buying CDs and ripping them into my computer. I still feel like it's the 90s in my house. I can't be bothered with all these services, because usually what happens is a song I like is there and then I go for it maybe a couple of weeks later and it's gone. Apple Music's particularly bad for this. They actually have playlists now on Apple Music where the songs themselves have been greyed out because they're no longer available. You think, how is that even possible? You know, this is your collection. You've created the playlist,
and
the audio's not even there.
If you buy music, you know you're getting the right version, the one that you want. Because often you ask for something, they'll give you the live version, or they'll give you a cover by somebody else.
That's right. It's usually, you know, if it's like the Drifters, it's like, you know, the Cleaner is having a go at singing the song. It's just ridiculous.
The one issue I had with buying music was, if you buy an album and then later on the artist does a remastered version of that album, Apple was treating it as a brand new album. So you'd have to buy it again, which is very frustrating if you've bought an album and you want to listen to it, but you can't because now you need to get the remastered version and pay the exact same price again. So very frustrating.
Okay, look, we'll take a break from the emails because we've still got David Woodbridge's chat about the Bristol Braille commute to come. But first, I want to bring in Roland Myers. He's here to tell us all about the Vital Tech support that is out there for visually impaired people. Roland.
Vital Tech is an online guide through the world of assistive technology for blind and partially sighted people in the UK. Well, actually, delving into the various categories or themes of the things that they talk about and provide information about, it actually goes a lot further than just technology. Aiming to keep things as simple and easy to understand as possible, they cover things like being organised, computing, health and well-being, heating, lighting and access, jobs around the house, reading and magnifying, relaxing at home, and staying in touch. Obviously, technology underpins a lot of all of that, and this service is funded by sight loss charity Thomas Pocklington Trust to provide advice and promote the adoption of accessible technology. Darren Pascal from Vital Tech told us a little more about the impartial information they can provide.
We've got all sorts of information. It's topic areas and grouped under various themes. They're kind of home-related, I guess you might say, at this point. So being organised, things like managing money, diaries, timekeeping, identifying, locating objects, and a few other areas besides. So health and well-being, and jobs around the house. So that might be anything from cooking, cleaning, various kitchen utensils, DIY tasks. So we cover that under jobs around the house, and clothing, laundry, and a few other areas. So staying in touch. So for instance, technology you might use to stay in touch with friends, family. That might be anything from, you know, tablets or phones, computing. In fact, smartphones is probably the most popular page that we've got at the moment. And we've also got computing. So that could be, again, anything really. What would you want to use a computer for? And how would you go about using a computer? So all sorts of things. Heating, lighting, we cover those as well as reading and magnifying. It's all very well having information out there, but what do you do when your post turns up? How can you read it? Well, certainly there are solutions out there, from reading books with a phone or a special device or a computer to actually getting books in accessible format, whether that's reading books or audiobooks. So, yeah, we've got information and guidance on all of those areas at the moment.
A broad range of topics there, and yet under this banner of Vital Tech. So how technical is some of the advice? Bearing in mind you talked about things like health and well-being and being organised and reading and magnifying, not topics that align with necessarily technology in its most complicated form. So do you write it in a way that people can understand who may not be too tech savvy?
Oh, definitely. And in fact, I think we recognise right since day one that Vital Tech can really come into its own for the benefit of people who might not already be aware of this sorts of technology. Because if you already know that there's, you know, a new snazzy magnifier or braille display, or you already have a bit of kit in mind, you're probably not going to come to Vital Tech. If you are technically savvy, you're probably going to look by other means, through a search engine or the internet or something. So, no, very much Vital Tech is sort of centered around offering information to people who might not otherwise know what's out there. And so, yes, we do try and keep everything that we have up on the site easy to read, easy to understand. And in fact, to that end, we've also got a jargon buster as well. So if there's ever any term that you come across on Vital Tech that you don't understand, hopefully we've referenced it in the jargon section. And even if not, please do get in touch and let us know. But certainly making it easy to read has always been our goal and always will be our goal.
I think anything that busts jargon has to be a good idea in everyone's book.
Yeah.
I'm wondering where you get your ideas normally. And I say normally, meaning in normal times, in which, of course, we are not at the moment. All this emphasis on how we have to rethink the way we live our lives and how we do things. So are you able to update it, maybe particularly in line with the coronavirus situation? Do you welcome suggestions? And can you get it up onto the website so people can access it even now?
Absolutely. Well, we always welcome suggestions. And in fact, that's kind of the purpose, really. If there's something that isn't on there that should be, clearly we need to hear about it. And yes, we certainly can update and continue to make changes to the site. That's the beauty of having a website, really. Anywhere that we can get online, we can monitor it, we can alter it, we can amend it, make changes and update it. So absolutely, we're always looking for suggestions. So if there is any content on there that you think, well, maybe we should have covered this, or even better, if there's something that we aren't covering that we should be, then definitely do let us know.
And Vital Tech can be accessed online on any computer or smart mobile phone at www.vitaltech, spelt VitalTech, all one lowercase word, .org.uk. That's www.vitaltech.org.uk. And they say they're hoping to develop the service further, so they welcome feedback. So if you have any comments or suggestions about the content, accessibility or functionality of the website, or you'd like any help using it, then you can email them at contact@vitaltech.org.uk. contact@vitaltech.org.uk.
Thank you, Roland. Well worth knowing about. That's another fantastic resource out there, Vital Tech. Darren Pascal, a great guy. I only ever meet him at events, at these big, you know, Site Village or BCAB or TAVIP, as it is now, events. But yeah, he's a great guy.
We should get him on.
And well worth mentioning. Yeah, I know. Well, we just did. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, he should come.
Top tips in here. Definitely.
Yeah. But you know what I like about that? He's talking about the other side of tech that we don't often get a chance to talk about here. And it's the stuff that, you know, everybody's using every day that you might not consider to be technology. But, you know, it may have a plug on it or it may have a battery in it. And that therefore does kind of put it in that realm. It doesn't all have to be, you know, superbly complicated.
Yep.
So, yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, look, we're going to move on because David Woodbridge is here. I know you put this interview together from David. Robin, do you want to talk us into it?
Yeah, so this is from David's brilliant IC, that's all one word, ISEE podcast, and I would very much recommend people search for that and subscribe because it has lots of demos, real life demos of gadgets and software, and in this case it's a piece of hardware, the Knut Braille reading machine, and he is talking to Eden Kaiser, who has one and has been loving it.
Hi, this is David Woodbridge again, and I've got somebody on the line, so to speak, via Zoom to talk to me about a product that I've been interested in for a while now. So I've got Eden here. So hi, Eden.
Hi, David. This is Eden Kaiser, and I'm here to talk about the Knut. It is a 9x40 cells, mm-hmm. very crisp braille.
Right. So did you ever feel the Orbit Reader 20 at all?
I did. The Braille is similar, but I think this is better.
Yeah, okay. So it's sort of that sort of pointy.
It's not as pointy as, you know, I've seen worse, but I have to adjust my touch to light.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I noticed on Twitter the other day you were saying that if you're a bit finger sensitive wise, you might have to just not push as hard onto the Braille.
Absolutely.
So besides the 9 lines of 40 cells, how big is the actual unit? Is it fairly large? Because 9 lines of Braille is quite big.
It's about a little bit wider than a Braille book, you know, mm-hmm. maybe by, you know, a little bit, but not by much. And from front to back, it's like an old cassette recorder. And mm-hmm. the Braille, the lines are spaced a little further apart than the, like on Braille paper.
Yep.
But not by enough to matter. I was a little concerned that it would be a problem, but it's not. I was also concerned because it, you know, takes a little while to refresh. It's like 10 seconds.
Wow.
And I was concerned that it couldn't keep up with me. But because you can easily reach down and tap the forward button because it's on the front of the unit, you do is about 6 lines not down, you press the forward button and it will go, and by the time you get to the first line, it'll be there.
Okay. Is there any other knobs or controls on the device?
I'll give you a little description here. On the front of the unit, there are 3 buttons, and they are labeled back, menu, and forward, and the Braille labels are on the top of the unit, but the actual buttons are on the front.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice, and they're not really protruding that much, but they are a little. And on the right hand side, and this is something I should absolutely tell you about, the cord is literally right next to the power button on the left of it, and the power button protrudes, I would say, about a quarter of an inch.
Wow.
And if you're not careful, if you pick it up and it's got the cord in it already, you'll bump the power button, and it all you have to do is bump the power button, and it turns off or on, depending on which. And so, yeah, it's got that. Nothing else on the right side. On the left-hand side, you have a bunch of ports. You have an HDMI port, which can show it in front on the screen. You have a headphone jack, which doesn't do anything yet, but it's they're looking at possibly being able to output speech or something. And then right above that headphone jack, like really, like just a tiny slit in the bottom, is the full-size SD card slot, which is where you put your books. And then above that is our 2 USB ports that you can use to put a USB stick in that can be used.
Excellent.
You still need the memory card if you want bookmarks, but the stick can do. And then there's also a USB-B port, which I have no idea what that is. And then on the top of the unit again, on the left-hand side, you have a help button up top. It's kind of a circle thingy on the top left hand. And then below that, you have 9 buttons labeled 1 through 9, which are triangle. And then at the very bottom is a square button labeled 0. That is so you can enter page numbers. Although I will tell you that because it's only 9 lines, you have to adjust your page numbers.
Right. Yep. And what those numbers from 1 to 9, when you press one of those,
they're used like if you decide that you want to bookmark a page, like you want to be able to bookmark a particular section so you can come back to it, because there's obviously no like find or search command. So you want to have a way to put bookmarks.
Yep.
So what you do is you use those lines to do bookmarks. You also use them to, in the menu, when you want to select things in the menu,
okay.
You use those lines, those buttons to select the menus. You know, like for saving bookmarks or going to the library.
Yep.
And of course, before this is over, David, I'll turn it on and show you everything.
Indeed.
Because
they
do tell you that it only takes 50 seconds. But what I have found is that it, you know, chatters away noisily at you for about 40 seconds, you know, with the noise that it makes. Mm-hmm. And then it goes dead quiet, and you think it's nothing, and there's no Braille.
Right.
And you're like, what is this thing doing? And then all of a sudden, it starts chattering again. And then it loads wherever you left off. Like
sure.
You left in the library mm-hmm. or inside the book, does not have any onboard translation. You must, that is the, I think, something that could be worked on, but they say that they wanted to make sure that they could support already ready files before they started going to other things. So right now, it's BRF and PEF. And you can also use RoboBraille, although I have been having some issues with that. But and, of course, it works with Duxbury and all that. And
excellent.
So, you know, any file you need to transfer.
So that would mean if you downloaded just a standard BRF file, like, I don't know, Harry Potter or some music braille or anything like that, so you could read any basically any BRF file that you wanted to?
Absolutely. You can read any BRF file. I specifically got it for music and also like astrology tables and reference materials because I love the unit and it would be good for pleasure reading. I guess my only reluctance with that is how like noisy it is. When I got it out of the box, it's a little heavy. They said it's like 6 or 7 pounds, but if it's only that much, it's dead weight.
Yeah.
Because it's heavy. It's very well made. I feel like if it's not got metal, it's some sort of heavy-duty plastic. Mm.
Does it feel good quality?
Very, very. Okay. The only thing I don't like I said, I'm not sure about the power button. It's a little further out than I want, but I don't think it's enough to break off.
Right. So when you get it in the box, what else do you get in with it? Do you actually get like a Braille instruction manual on actually how to use it?
You only get a quick start guide, which is like one page. However, it's online, the manual, and it's like 4 pages long.
Oh, okay. That's very quick.
It's a really simple device. It does what it does, and, you know, it does it reasonably well, like noisily, but well. I was raised carrying around a Brailler. Not as noisy as that.
Yep.
But, I don't know, people say they talk over it, and they don't have to raise their voice, but maybe I just talk quietly.
But I'm assuming, because you said it's not really for editing, it's more for reading, there's no sort of auto-cursoring little buttons above each Braille display where you can jump to a particular word or anything?
No, because you're not, there's no, like...
There's no editing, is there? No.
Keyboard, no Braille. There are people that are asking, can it be used with a screen reader? And Bristol Braille is saying that they are going to be working with NVDA and Google. But the thing that, it might be good for programming, like, say, someone needed to see spatially. I would not. Like, if you're arrowing down a page really quick and trying to get somewhere really, that's not going to be the best use case.
Okay.
I think people won't be disappointed if they, you know, accept it is what it is and not a replacement for, you know, it's not a replacement for my Q-Braille.
No. All right. Well, do we want to do the crash test, so to speak, and turn it on?
Yeah. I'm going to turn it on.
Oh, yep.
And it's bumping up the first line saying... Please wait.
Okay. Sounds like somebody's using an old Perkins Braille, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it kind of sound like that?
Yeah, clunk, clunk, clunk.
And now it's running lines. Okay, it's cleared whatever page. I don't know why it clears it instead of just coming up. But now there's nothing but a couple of weird-looking dots.
Okay.
And it's sitting there, and like you're thinking, what is it doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, here we go. It's still not printing anything, but I'm not seeing anything yet.
Okay.
It's making a lot of noise.
Well, at least you know it's alive anyway. It's doing something.
Okay. Now it's printing. Okay, there we go. See, you don't know. And it's on the page where I was and reading a book. And it's nice, crisp Braille, and now it's done. You could use it in a class because it's no different than a Braille or as far as noise. It really is a good device, but yes.
So how long does it take to change between the current 9 lines and the next 9 lines? Is it fairly quick?
I'll give you this. That's it.
Each time I was hearing a click, was that one of the lines filling up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was. I find it's a little less noisy if I put it on something soft, like my blanket or my lap, or it on my lap desk. It's a little bit more funky on a desk. So I would recommend putting like some foam or a cushion or something underneath
it. Did it take a while? Because I'm assuming, like for me, if I was reading a line of Braille, I would immediately reach to the next panning button to go to the next line rather than thinking, oh, I can go down line by line now and actually read right down to the bottom. Did that take a while getting used to?
Honestly, no, because I hate having to pan so bad it hurts. It's why a lot of times I will put my braille files on my cube braille where I can read it internally because I can use auto scroll. But even then, you don't always know how quickly, like, you might want to take longer to read a line or you might not know how long. So it's nice to have, and it's real easy to hit that forward button because once you reach like line, you know, six or seven, it's right under your thumb on the front, you know, and so, you know, on your right hand thumb, it hits it. It's seamless reading. If I could just figure out a way for it to be quieter,
it
would be perfect.
So is it actually battery operated as well?
That's the sad thing. It is not right now.
Right.
But honestly, because it's large, I feel like it would not be a light battery.
Mm.
And the thing's already heavy. And I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, you can throw this thing in your backpack, but it's not something you're just going to whip out. And
no, you know, you're not. No. When you've been reading your music braille, have you actually found reading down all the different bars and that sort of stuff in a column type or table situations worked really well?
It has. When you play piano and harp, which are the two instruments that I mess with, they're left and right hand. And the right hand is presented in most places above the left hand. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for instance, when I use one line display, I'm trying to match up what beats in the left hand go with what beats in the right hand. And it's not always doable. And in a lead sheet, which is where you have just the chord symbols, right below the word where they start or the syllable or the note melody, you absolutely need two lines.
Right. Okay. So that works really well on the multiple lines?
It really does, especially an NOS file or one from like Goodfeel, which is music translation software. It really does a good job. And I think it's pretty amazing that they basically got this cheaper than the Orbit and stuff for sell wise.
All right. So any final thoughts? I mean, who do you think it's great for? I mean, you mentioned libraries.
Good for like musicians, math people, because of equations.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for computer programmers. You know, it's good for reading too. As long, you know, if you're not bothered by it, or you know, you just want to read something that you prefer to read that way, or that's all you have, it would be fun too.
So, Aiden, let's just turn off, and I just want to see if it actually makes any sounds.
I'm gonna let you hear this and let you see for yourself. And it's saying, please wait. And then it's still up, please wait.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's done.
Right.
But that's all. It just makes a couple little noises. But sometimes it seems like it takes longer. So.
Well, thank you for that. And thanks for coming on the program.
You're welcome.
Well, there's Eden's view on the Bristol Braille Canute. It's a noisy thing, isn't it, Robert?
Yeah, and one thing that I was surprised about since I last kind of heard about the price. Now, she mentioned there, Eden, that cell for cell, it's a lot cheaper than the Orbit Reader. And considering it's got 360 cells, she's absolutely right. I could have sworn that it was around the sort of £700 mark, but looking online, so the UK resellers are Technovision. And that's techno-vision.co.uk. And they've got it, it's back ordered at the moment, but you can order it there for $1,895, which was a bit of an eyebrow raiser for me, considering, you know, the last time I heard the price. But maybe that was for people that wanted to help out in the kind of prototyping stage. I don't know. Or maybe it was the predicted price. I don't know. But $1,895, I think, is still great for a full page reading experience, which is obviously unheard of, above and beyond, you know, actual paper braille.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of money for sure. And I think if it was me, and you know, this is just a personal thing, but if I was going to buy something like that at that price, I'd want it to be portable. I'd want a battery in it. I'd want to be able to take it on the move, much more than I would probably rather have it. I mean, and because I mean, the other thing as well is, I mean, you're not going to take it to the beach because you can't plug it in.
Don't think we'll get sand in that baby either. No.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, you've just spent under $2,000 on something and you've just got it covered in sand. No thanks. But no, it's an interesting device for sure. Well, you can tell us your thoughts. I'd be interested to hear them because, of course, we're seeing other devices coming out. I think Orbit aren't far away from doing something very similar. I mean, I'm not hearing that officially, but I just have that impression from the devices that they are building at the moment. It's all kind of moving towards this. They do have something. It's not the Canute style. It's not a nine-line display, but they do have a tactile display system, which is built for schools so kids can understand, you know, tactile images, for example, all that kind of thing. So, you know, I wouldn't surprise me if next year we saw Orbit come out with this something like this a lot cheaper as well. Like a bit of competition in the Braille world. That's good. Drive the price down a bit. Okay, well, look, we don't have much time left. I was hoping to get another couple of emails in, but I think we'll maybe try and get one in, Andy, if we've got
time. Yeah, there's a shorter one at the end here, so I can just give this a mention. This is from Jim. Hi, guys. Just thought I would pass on a wee tip. I heard Grumpy Stephen a few weeks ago saying that most...
Oh, hang on. What?
Yeah, that's his words, not mine. Grumpy Stephen. Saying that most GPS apps like Soundscape, Maps or Lazarillo are brilliant until the last 5 or 10 yards. Now this is correct and it can be tricky if you need to, say, visit one business in town which has one entrance door but is closely surrounded by several others. I've been using the Bose Frames with Soundscape and a couple of others, and the tip that I stumbled across is simply to put 2 markers on that business entrance. The first marker activates about 5 or 10 yards from the entrance as expected, and then it follows immediately by the second exactly as you reach your destination. Hope this helps. That's from Jim.
Interesting tip. Yeah, you probably knew that, Robin.
Well, I can see what he's doing there, but I don't see how that gets around the laws of physics, which is that satellites in the sky are notoriously poor, depending on how many you can see at any one time, whether what time of year it is, whether there's more leaves on the tree or not. You could get up to 10 yards away, 10 meters away from where you are. So I really like the tip, though, and I'm actually going to try it, because it's basically putting, yeah, 2 markers on the same thing, and I would expect them to trigger at the same time. But if he's saying, you know, they kind of take it in turns and the next one actually brings you theoretically a lot closer, I'm definitely going to try it. Yep.
Oh, just stick on a couple of tile stickers somewhere. Yeah. That's what I do. Go to do it in hotel rooms and hope that they don't either fall off or housekeeping pull them off and throw them in the bin. I use that all the time. I think they're brilliant. Yep. You know, however you're trying to find your hotel room. It's always a nightmare, but you stick a sticker in the room or just one of even the tiles in a bag in the room.
Secrete it somewhere. And then you'll feel like a spy.
Yeah. You do, but of course you've got to be careful because you have got something beeping in your bag in a room that's empty. That could be seen as dangerous. Anyway, look, we're out of time. That's it for our show. Thank you so much for listening. Back same time next week as always on the podcast as well. Robin and Andy, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And don't forget, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk.